Oh, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Good evening.
We have some sashing flavor tonight. thank the ones who kept the walls warm here while we were up there. It makes a big difference if it keeps rolling wherever. And we have some new faces tonight, at least new to some of us. So let's do introductions.
Marie.
Jeffrey.
Nico.
Ellie.
Carmen.
Wendy.
Paul.
Yep.
Micah.
Victor.
Okay. You all are way far away out there.
I was going to say, Victor, do you want to sit closer? Because I remember you would like to be closer.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Tighten up the circle a little bit. So we came away from Sashin. I think very happy to have been there, in spite of crowds of flies and a lot of heat. It was very hot, mostly pretty hot. But we had a full moon ceremony and stood out in the driveway and chanted the whole ordination ceremony, starting with all my ancient wrong actions. It's always a wonderful chance when it's a full moon time. And of course, it wasn't agreed on exactly when the moon was coming up, so we waited in the dark for a long time. But we did everything that we meant to do, and just as we were done, through those trees came this little silver light that's coming. So it was perfect timing, really. And everybody worked so hard in the sendo and in the kitchen and all around. It's Sashin is so much about effort, true effort. I always think of Sashin as, oh no, I'm going up to the Zendo and I'm going to sit for a week. But it isn't exactly like that. You go and sit and bow and chant and leave the Zendo to wash the dishes and sweep the decks and do all the things that are required to hold the whole situation together. And by the end of the week, it's one organic body. It feels so fine. It's the meaning of Sangha is that, how it is to truly be together and work together and know each other here. Not all these judgments that we're always saying, oh, I see that person, and it's not like that. It just goes. So we've been deep into this book, which is the Vimalakirti Sutra, and it's more and more like a fairy tale. I think it should be made into an opera. I really do. It would be such a wonderful, really quite dazzling opera. But in any case, it's a wonderful story. The basic story is that Vimalakirti is a lay person. He's not a monk or a priest or a bodhisattva in any kind of obvious way. he's taken to his bed, and all the bodhisattvas come to check out with him and see how he's doing and what he means by doing that. And he takes it as the chance to teach. And he's teaching the bodhisattvas, and in some ways kind of shaming them in misunderstanding how the Dharma really is. It's not to become some kind of holy, perfect person. It's to be able to go out and be in the world and do things that are of benefit, that are wholesome and of great help in a very, very painful and difficult world. And that's what this chapter is basically about. It's called, in this book, Fragrance Accumulated. Thomas Cleary calls it Receiving Emanation of Food. Neither one of them is really quite touches it, but it starts out to say, at that time, this is when a little drama happened before, of they were all to tell Vimalakirti the essence of practice, and they each had some sort of very wonderful thing to say about the Dharma. And finally, Manjushri just bowed. It was his time, the last thing. And everybody thought, oh, he did it. He did it just right. He just bowed. Vimalakirti didn't say a word. So his silence is famous through the ages as the ultimate, although there have been teachers who have challenged Vimalakirti's silence also. It's how much can we say about the untalkaboutable. So Shariputra thought to himself, it's almost noon. What are all these bodhisattvas going to eat? Very practical. Very practical. The bodhisattvas are all sitting in very high chairs, and Vimalakirti is lying down in bed. So it's kind of a strange scene, and it's the room is filled with thousands and thousands of beings. Vimalakirti said, "The Buddha preached the eight emancipations. You, sir, should undertake to practice them. Why be distracted by thoughts of eating when you are listening to the law? If you want something to eat, wait a minute. I'll see that you get the sort of food you've never had before." So Vimalakirti went into a samadhi state, and he cooked up, he went up to a place called Many Fragrances, high, high above. Beyond Buddha lands is numerous as many, many sands of Ganges. And the Buddha there, named Fragrance Accumulated, was present there. And it was a beautifully, beautifully scented country. Everything just was so fragrant. It was just unimaginable. And there was not even here a voice hearer or pratyekut Buddha, but only great bodhisattvas, pure and clean, for whom the Buddha preached the law. And they all built houses and towers and palaces out of the fragrances. It was all just beautiful, beautiful smells, incense burning and all the smoke rising. So they were all sitting down to eat just as Vimalakirti arrived. That was fortuitous. And they Vimalakirti addressed them, saying, "Sirs, who among you can bring us some of the Buddha's food?" And Vimalakirti said, "Sir, a great assembly such as this, this is shameful, is it not, that Manjushri couldn't say anything?" And Manjushri said, "As the Buddhists told us, never despise those who have yet to learn." So they were all trying to figure out what they were supposed to be doing. And Buddha cooked up this figure that was way tall and golden and shining, the most brilliant looking bodhisattva anybody had ever seen, and Vimalakirti asked for the leftovers of the meal and took it back to his folks in his room. So nobody could see many fragrances, but they all came down, and Vimalakirti began to talk to them. And then they all saw the conjured up Buddha and wanted to know where he came from and what it was all about. And Buddha said, "There is a world called Saha. There is a world where at present it's manifest." Buddha named Shakyamuni as present manifesting himself in that evil world of the five impurities in order to expound the teaching of the way. So instead of a world of fragrances and peace, it's a world of tremendous difficulty. So Buddha was very impressed with Vimalakirti and said his powers are great. He dispatches phantoms in all 10 directions to carry out the Buddha's work. So the fragrance accumulated person took a bowl of many fragrances and filled it with fragrant rice and gave it to the phantom. And he took it back to Vimalakirti's room. And Buddha said, "If you're going to Buddha at Vimalakirti's room, take back your fragrances, because that'll be too much for these people. They just don't quite get it yet. It'll be overwhelming. And don't look on this land, this Saha land that you're going to go and visit, as with contempt or disdain, or rouse thoughts that obstruct progress, because these lands are really empty as the sky. A field of space. It's really, besides, in spite of what you see and how it appears, it's just a field of space." But the Buddhists want to convert those who delight in the lesser doctrine, and so they don't reveal that it's like this. They don't tell. So the phantom received the bowl of rice and joined the 9 million bodhisattvas, and all relying upon the might and supernatural power of the Buddha and upon Vimalakirti's power, suddenly vanished from that world and then arrived in Vimalakirti's house. And then he conjured up 9 million lion seats, beautifully adorned like the ones that were already there, and the bodhisattvas all sat down on them. So then the bodhisattva presented the bowl with fragrant rice to Vimalakirti, and it perfumed the entire city of Visali. So a fellow called Moon Canopy, a leader among the rich men, accompanied by 84,000 persons, came to Vimalakirti's house, and seeing everybody there, he was filled with delight. And he invited everyone, Vimalakirti invited everyone to come and eat the rice, delicious as sweet dew, redolent with the odor of great pity. You must not eat it in a narrow-minded manner, or you will never digest it. You will not be able to enjoy the gift. Some of the other voice hearers thought to themselves, there's only a little rice. How can it feed all the people in this great assembly? But the Bantam Bodhisattva said, don't try to use your voice hearer's petty virtue and petty wisdom in appraising the immeasurable blessing and wisdom of the Thus Come One. Though the four seas run dry, this rice will never come to an end. Because this is the leftovers from a meal eaten by persons who have acquired inexhaustible merits. Through the precepts, meditation, wisdom, emancipation, and the insight of emancipation, therefore, it can never be exhausted. This is a very fancy metaphor for what it is to practice the Dharma. That once we begin, it can never be exhausted. Once we make that connection. Sometimes it seems kind of puny. Koban sometimes said in Sesshin, you sit thinking, oh, Zazen, come to me, come to me, where are you? And somebody told me once she thought it was like sending a love letter and waiting for the answer to come back. But it's practice that is the nourishment, the fragrant rice. And perhaps it comes from an imaginary bodhisattva, a great golden, impressive golden bodhisattva, but perhaps it just comes from deep, deep inside each one of us. So Vimalakirti asks the bodhisattvas how the many fragrances, Buddha, how did the Thus Come One fragrance accumulated, which is his name, preach the law? And they said, he doesn't employ words in his exposition. He just uses various fragrances to induce heavenly and human beings to undertake the observance of the precepts. Each bodhisattva sits under a fragrant tree, and when he smells the marvelous fragrance, he immediately attains the samadhi known as storehouse of all virtues. So the bodhisattvas then ask Vimalakirti, now how does the world-honored one Shakyamuni preach the law down here in this Saha world? And Vimalakirti then launches into this long teaching of the Dharma. He says, living beings of this land are stubborn and strong-willed and hard to convert. Therefore, the Buddha uses strong language when preaching to them in order to tame and control them. He says, this is hell. This is the realm of beasts. This is the realm of hungry spirits, and these are difficult conditions. This is the place where stupid people are born. These are misdeeds of the body. These are the retribution for misdeeds of the body, etc. And then he goes on, this is the killing of living beings. This is the retribution for killing living beings. This is taking what has not been given to you. This is the retribution for taking what has not been given to you. And it goes straight through the precepts like that. Sexual misconduct, lying, stealing, speech, harsh speech. And then he goes through erroneous views like stinginess and breaking the precepts and anger and violating the precepts and what should be done and not be done. It just shows the extreme complicated way that we live our life and how our minds have this extremely difficult way of coping with things, trying to understand and how to be in the world. How do we navigate this place? How do we be this body with all its strangeness and all of its challenges and all of the stuff that happens? And how do we get food, and how do we relate with our family and our and these strangers that we keep encountering? Who are all these others? There's just all, we are born into a world of questions and confusion. And so then Vimalakirti goes into when the bodhisattvas had finished hearing about all these things, he ends up by saying, "These people who are difficult to convert have minds like monkeys. Therefore, one must resort to various methods in order to control and regulate their minds. Only then can they be tamed and made obedient. It's like dealing with an elephant or a horse that is wild and unruly. One must apply sharp blows till it feels them in its bones, and then it can be tamed. And it is the same with these stubborn and strong-willed beings who are so difficult to convert. Therefore, one uses all sorts of bitter and piercing words, and then they can be made to observe the precepts." So when those bodhisattvas had finished listening to this explanation, they all exclaimed, "We've never heard of such a thing before. A world-honored one like Shakyamuni, who conceals his immeasurable powers of freedom and preaches the law in a manner that will please the mean in spirit in order to save and liberate all beings." And these bodhisattvas, how zealous of them in their immeasurably great pity to condescend to be born in this Buddha land, in the Sangha world. And that's what we consider to be bodhisattva practice, is to agree to be here in the mess and do what we can. So Vimalakirti said, "This world endurance, the bodhisattvas are indeed steadfast in their great pity for all living beings. The enrichment and benefit they bring to living beings in one lifetime here is greater than that bestowed in other worlds over the space of 100,000 kalpas. Because in the Saha world, there are 10 good practices that do not exist in any of those other pure lands." And then we get the 10 pure practices: almsgiving, practicing the precepts, forbearance, assiduousness, wisdom. It's all the paramitas. And the doctrine of the great vehicle, the cultivation of good roots, the four ways of winning people, constantly employed to guide living beings to success. And they use 8 methods in their practices. They enrich and benefit living beings and take upon themselves their suffering. And they are like other living beings, humbling themselves, descending to their level and erecting no barriers. They shall regard other bodhisattvas as though they were looking at the Buddha himself. When they hear a sutra they have not heard before, they shall not doubt it, and they shall not dispute with or oppose the voice hearers, the ones who are not quite there yet. They shall not envy the alms received by others, nor boast of their own gains. And they must regulate and control their minds, constantly reflecting on their own faults and not censuring the shortcomings of others. At all times they shall, with a single mind, strive to acquire merits These are the eight methods. And when Vimalakirti and Manjushri expounded these teachings to the great assembly, 100,000 heavenly and human beings all set their minds on attaining enlightenment. And 10,000 bodhisattvas were able to accept the truth of birthlessness. So it's a whole lot in a nutshell, but essentially it's saying that we feel as if the world we're living in is kind of a rotten place a lot of the time. And we often feel that we have to do something about it, or that it needs some kind of extra help. But what it's pointing to is really how to act. What kind of act, how we are with the actions of our mind and the actions of our body. That's all we really have any control over. And that's the thing that we can do something about. But it takes noticing those things. We can be a crazy horse or a cow, but if we just go on like a monkey swinging through the trees as our mind just goes, it gives us a lot of grief. It explains our grief. That we are driven then by what's radically untamed. So it doesn't mean that we beat ourselves into submission. It isn't even about surrendering to some kind of great power. It just means getting to know ourselves really, really well. Allowing ourselves to cop to who we are, what our proclivities are, what our best parts are. And Buddha said you try to develop the good parts and try not to develop the not very good parts. And know the difference. So it's not about feeling bad about ourselves because we do bad things. I think we have to forgive ourselves over and over again. And just start over. We just have to start over, and sometimes over and over, until we get some kind of grip on what it is that drives us. So that the more aligned we are, aligned with our breath and our body, in the moment that we're in, rather than our mind shooting off into some kind of idea or a challenge or some kind of drama. Really, the only drama that happens is right in our brain. So taming that wild animal of us is really just learning to be present and to breathe with it and to learn to enjoy it. I mean, it's pretty funny, really, what we do. A lot of the time, it's pretty silly. What? I did that? Or I want to do that? Or I'm going to do that? I say that. Annabelle, are you kidding? It just has to be pretty absurd a lot of times. And if you've raised children, you know, kids are just off the wall all the time. And little by little, they become more self-knowledge. And if we don't beat the tar out of them, then they can be free agents in the world without without suffering a lot, because they know themselves. there's not a lot of time for questions, but there's a little time for discussion.
What is samadhi state?
What is samadhi
state?
Samadhi state. It's zazen. Yes. There are many samadhi states. I mean, in some practices they measure them. There are 10 or 12 of them, and they're presumably measurable by people's experience in intense sitting. But it's all sitting. And chopping an onion is a samadhi practice also, if you're really focused on it. That's a samadhi. Driving your car is a samadhi. It's how to be really present with what you're doing. And of course, the king samadhi, Dogen calls it, is just sitting and not doing anything except just breathing. Yeah.
Did you get challenged on the last day of the
Oh, yes. Sitting? Oh, we had a Shosan ceremony, and people all asked questions. And yes, I was challenged with every question. Yeah, you weren't there.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
I'm sorry, you did too. Yap was there.
Yeah.
And Nico was there. Wendy.
She made it look easy.
I didn't fall off the chair, so I guess it was okay. Yeah. We'll do it again. Yeah?
So in the passage you were reading, there was a lot of very strong language about Buddha coming into the world and using extremely strong language to make people, I don't remember the word they used, but I guess submit. And so I wonder, how do you read that?
Well, I read it not like many of us were raised, that you're all sinners and you're all going to go to hell unless you... Buddha didn't present it that way. It did mention hell and the animal realm and forgotten. There are six realms in his teaching, and the hell realm is one of them. And the animal realm and the warrior realm and the...
Hungry ghost.
Thank you. Thank you, Victor. And Victor was there too. And then the human realm, and then the Deva realm, the heavenly realm. And the idea is that we cycle through those realms. Some people take it literally, and most people, I think, at least in Zen, take it as a psychological presentation of how the mind works. That we go through times in our life that feels like a hell realm. And there are times when we are just so lustful or so greedy or so wild that it's a kind of an animal world. You know, you can, and there are heavenly realm kind of times that we have. But the idea in Buddha's teaching is they don't last. None of them does. And the only way to leave all of that is the human realm, to practice in the human realm. And if you practice hard enough and long enough, you can step out of all of that and not be driven by it, not be turned and turned and turned from one thing to another. In other words, to have some mind control. That's really what it's about. So nobody's calling us a sinner. We can recognize those things in ourselves, but we don't have to worry about it. It's not like that. It's time.
So I have a couple of announcements.
Oh, good.
So we have a full day, as if you haven't sat enough, we have a full day sitting coming up on September 10th. I'll need somebody to open that day. And so it's after Labor Day, September 10th on Saturday. And just a reminder about Zendo forms in the Zendo, walking meditation, or Kinhin rather, one step with each exhalation. We turn and face the altar when we do the prostrations, and then when we chant, we turn and face each other. So you know, just make sure we have all that straight, and full instructions are on the website.
Where will that be?
The full day sit will be here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's 9 to 4 with an hour off for lunch, and you bring your own lunch or run out to Safeway and get something.
I live on the same block. So.
Yeah, and you're just right down there. And you're
oh, yeah. Thank you, guys. Yeah. Oh, definitely.
He's a neighbor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's a Dharma talk after lunch. So it's a full day. It's quite a full day.
Of the 10th, Saturday. Yeah. Wendy, anything else?
No.
Okay. We'll have a 1-minute sit, and then we'll chant the Bodhisattva vows.